You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Why, hello there, everyone. Welcome to a new episode. I know I said this last week too, but I apologize. There are some slight audio issues here. This is a Skype episode because we lost an episode. However, this is a classic movie and I think it's a good conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Thoughts, comments, questions. First, if you're listening to this when it comes out tonight, I am recording, riffing the movie Bail Out. Which is a David Hasselhoff movie with like seven names, so Bail Out is the version we went with. If you haven't done it before, rate and review us, and follow us on Twitter, at MyopiaPod. We're on Facebook, and we're on Instagram, so please let us know how we're doing. We've grown a lot in the last couple months, thanks to being sponsored, or at least featured, by Podbean. But please, feel free to let us know in person. Thanks, guys!
Where are those transmissions you intercepted, including those of the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast? I need my weekly dose of sci-fi news with movie and TV reviews and commentary.
We intercepted no transmissions! This is a consular ship!
If this is a consular ship, where is the ambassador?
Sorry, I was indisposed.
I will give it a moment to air out, if you know what I mean.
Who needs the ambassador? I thought I heard someone call out for me. What in the bloody hell did you do to Ramus? Speak up! Which one of those chest buttons calls your supervisor, you imbecile?
Geez, mister. Honestly, he was, like that when we got here, right, fellas?
Mister, I am an ambassador.
Let me see your identification.
Shut it, Bob. You are as clumsy as you are stupid. He doesn't have to show you your ID.
We don't need to see his identification.
You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Libsyn.com, and Stitcher Radio. The Monster Sci-Fi Show is part of the ESO Network. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view.
Welcome to My Opie Defend Your Childhood. This week we watched E.T. the Extraterrestrial. I had a joke, it's gone. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of My Opie Defend Your Childhood and member of Cineprov. And on panel we have...
Lauren.
And Matthew W. Quinn, whose book The Thing in the Woods is about a much less friendly extraterrestrial.
Hello, this is Daniel, and my home planet is stuck in a dead zone.
All right, guys. Well, you might notice an audio difference. We're recording this one on Skype, which is unusual for us, but sometimes these things happen.
Woo!
Yeah, I know.
Technology.
It was bad, guys. All you would hear is occasionally, like, Daniel breathing, and that was it. Just me. It was great for me.
Oh. Yeah.
I don't know why. Like, of all the microphones, Daniel, yours only worked kind of. So everyone else was silent.
Well, I hope you turned my breathing to like some 8-hour yoga meditation tape. Jeez, not a Yoda meditation tape.
I just put it.
Is there a Yoda meditation tape? Because if not, there needs to be.
Absolutely.
Universe, you shall be. Mind, you shall clear.
That's kind of it. I should kind of just splice that in every, you know, few minutes. Just you saying that as a way to kind of clarify how bad this went. this has been a little bit later than most recordings since we watched it, but generally I think we all liked this movie. It was a lot of fun. It was heartwarming and kind of standard Spielberg family forward.
It held up pretty well. It held up pretty well.
And what I remember when we watched it and like kind of seeing it with you guys, not only was there this kind of sense of whimsy, which we hadn't had much of this season yet. There's also this, the practical effects hold up very nicely. The movie looks very vivid and it's kind of a creative story. And I want to kind of get to that, but Daniel, why don't you give us the plot summary to start off?
Well, I'm sure everybody knows the plot of E.T., but just in case you've been living under a rock for, what, 36 years now? E.T. is an alien, shocking, I know, since his name stands for extraterrestrial, who is on a mission to collect plants from the planet Earth. He unfortunately gets stranded after his ship leaves without him, and this kid named Elliot finds him in his backyard. So Elliot's family tries to hide E.T. from his parents and for the rest of the world, and they also teach E.T. about life on Earth and things like how to speak English and about the smooth, refreshing tastes of Coors Light. Eventually, E.T. decides he wants to contact his people and go home, and so the kids help him do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I think, well, we'll kind of get through this as we need to, but what stuck out to you guys about this film? What held up? What didn't? How do you guys picture this movie now?
The acting from the kids was really good. Like Henry Thomas as Elliot, there's a genuine pathos with him, especially when E.T. gets sick. And the older brother, Robert McNaughton, he did a really good job, and he had his own arc. He firstly really doesn't like Elliot because he's like a tag-along. And then by the end of the movie, he's enthusiastically helping out. And I think all those kids on bikes, most of them were actually the older brother's friends, not Elliot's.
Definitely. This movie was as good as I remember. I think it definitely held up. The acting is awesome. And, you know, I also remember it being just so heartwarming and loving. And at the same time, E.T. being so charming and you love E.T., but also like you're terrified. Or at least I was as a little bit. I remember this movie so vividly when I was with my mom and my grandmother. I would request to watch this movie like all the time because I loved E.T., but I was also scared of him. So I would hide behind my mom and a blanket all the time at the parts where he would jump up. But at the same time, I loved him, you know, and you can't help but have that endearing, you know?
Hey, I saw this movie on VHS tape when I was really little. I had two older cousins who came to visit. And I remember like the spacesuit guys coming in through the windows and the doors being quite frankly, utterly terrifying.
I was just really surprised about how intimate it is. I mean, it was for a while the highest grossing movie ever. And it, I guess, had been built up in my mind as this huge epic, which apart from a couple scenes like the famous scene with the kid riding the bike in front of the moon, it's really played more like a smaller children's film, and I don't know, it was just really great. I really felt myself connecting to the characters more that way.
Well, and it's to its benefit, because I mean the thing about Spielberg, which is, I mean, whatever, but you know, Lauren and I were talking about this before. He can be kind of boring. He can be kind of long-winded. And so to do really almost a parable, you know, it's charming. It's cute. It's kind of entertaining. But you know, it's all done in this kind of very specific way. I really enjoyed this movie as for what it was, which is, you know, it's a standard kind of precocious kids 80s movie. But it's done in such an interesting kind of charming way that's unusual. I don't know what you'd really even compare it to because of the creature effects. But, you know, had it not been for the E.T. part, the kids seem very much like 80s kids in another movie, you know, like a Stand By Me or something.
Yeah, this is probably blasphemous or whatever, but Spielberg is definitely not my favorite director. I'll probably get a lot of hate for that, but I mean, don't get me wrong. I adore him, and clearly he makes lots of masterpieces, and he's a genius and an artist in his own right. But I personally will take Quentin Tarantino or John Hughes over him any day. I just think Spielberg, you know, just kind of boring at times, and he gets there. He definitely gets there and gets his point. But a lot of times he takes a while getting there.
Yeah, I agree. It is that my one complaint about the movie, it was pretty slow moving.
I think a part of the problem is for a while Spielberg was the person to beat, and that was because he was so revolutionary at the time, and like what he was doing, there really hadn't been anything like E.T. before. But now, ever since it was released, everybody's been copying it. I mean, we've had two seasons of Stranger Things that are basically E.T. but R-rated in a TV show, and then we've had that Super 8 movie that J.J. Abrams did. Maybe that's why I think a lot of people think he's boring, and he has made some very boring films, but also they just don't seem as revolutionary anymore.
He has made some very boring
films. Yeah. They were, yeah. Like, especially the flying scene and the iconic flying scene over the moon, you know, that was, at the time, very revolutionary, but now probably not so much.
And also,
well, he was also the guy that popularized that scene, because, Nick, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't that borrowed from some Italian neorealist film?
Sounds like it. I believe it was
The scene with the bike?
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. I forget the movie, though. It's been a long time since I've done that part of my film studies.
Well, here's something I've thought about being revolutionary. Had there ever been a friendly alien in movies before? Because before that, there were a lot of alien invasion movies.
The Day That the Earth Stood Still.
Is Gort friendly? I thought it was more like, stop screwing around or we'll kill all of you.
No, you bring up a good point, Matt, because actually Spielberg was originally going to make E.T.
Like a horror movie.
Attack be like about an alien that attacks a family. And that was going to be the original premise for this movie. But then later he decided to not do that and to turn it into heartwarming and heartfelt, more family friendly. And what's it called? You guys can help me out where they're here.
Oh, Poltergeist.
Poltergeist.
That's also Spielberg.
Technically, 2001: A Space Odyssey is about friendly aliens.
Kinda. I mean, but you don't see the aliens.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's more like, this is almost like a Bigfoot movie, honestly. This is closer to Harry and the Hendersons than it is to... Whatever, 2001.
Yeah, you don't fear E.T., you fear for him. He's this little 4-foot-tall alien turtle that gets sick.
Yeah, who's doing
Mitch
nothing.
Mitch McConnell?
I had no joke there, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he has all these medical people poking and prodding him and trying to get to him and kidnap him, and the government, you know, and they're clearly marked vehicles that says government.
Well, and it does a good job of playing to your fears. You know, this also has kind of elements of All the President's Men and, like, these kind of dark, shadowy, unnamed people who, frankly, you don't even really see the faces except for that one guy who turns out to be a benefit, right? Like, he tends to be motivation, protecting E.T.
I don't know if they ever actually give him a name. He always has the keys on his belt.
Because he's Peter. This is a Jesus allegory.
There was always something about that character when I was a kid that I'd forgotten about, but rewatching reminded me. When he talked about that to Elliot about how E.T. came to him too, he's been waiting for this moment since he was 10 years old. When I was a kid, I thought that meant that E.T. had also visited him, like, 40 years previously and just happened to come back. I mean, now I guess it was more about his obsession with alien life, but what do you guys think? Was I onto something, or was I just being a dumb kid?
You are not wrong, and I brought this up before, I think, but there's a conspiracy theory out there, because why not, of like that Spielberg is being fed these stories, because he also did Close Encounters of the Third Kind, both of which are supposed to be based on real, like, pretty famous events in this whole crazy whatever alien thing. And so the idea that there was a friendly alien that came to Earth that would tell people things that, like, the government had hidden away is a pretty common idea, right? And so, like, that's kind of where they got to it. I think it makes more sense that this is a story of a kid who, for lack of a better term, found, like, a cat that he was trying to hide from his parents. You know, that he was trying to protect a kitten and then didn't feed it the right food because kids don't know how to do stuff. And the cat got sick and he had to come forward. Right. Like, that's kind of what makes the most sense to me.
It does. It does remind you of that he's bringing in a pet stray and that he lured in with Reese's Pieces.
Yeah.
You know, it's just iconic, so.
Yeah, Nick, you saw this when I talked about it on Facebook. You could read this from the alien's perspective as a horror movie. He's stranded in an unknown world being treated as a pet by a bunch of children.
And, I mean, from there, we kind of can get into the rest of the story because, you know, what Lauren said, Elliot hears some rumbling outside and is scared, so he leaves a trail of Reese's. It's kind of the iconic scene on this starless night that we kind of lure E.T. in. Elliot screams and runs away, but he ends up trying to befriend this kind of little midget man. I don't know. It's like that's kind of the opening bit, trying to get him home. Like the middle act is E.T. learning about Earth, which is kind of your cute classic, doesn't know how to use a refrigerator, the kind of thing that, you know, seems like Brendan Fraser does every third movie, followed very closely by him trying to phone home. So we should kind of get through these two, like the middle section, before we get to the end, and then we'll talk a little bit about each. But E.T. dicking around the Elliot's home is kind of where most of the scenes that I remember come from. I don't know why. Like Matt was kind of alluding to, maybe it was that it was creepy, but I don't remember much of the end of this movie, because it is really quite unsettling.
Well, I mean, I think that was what gave it a nice little touch, because he's doing basically what somebody else would do whenever they're going to visit a stranger's or a friend's home that they've never been to. You know, they'd hang out, they'd watch a bit of TV, maybe raid the fridge for a beer. It's moments like that that really make you relate to this little 4-foot-tall alien thing.
And we should kind of from there talk a little bit about his sister, Drew Barrymore, doing, you know, a fine job for kid actors. I have very little hope for any kid actor or actress, although she's fine in it, and Elliot is really, really good in this movie. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting.
I agree. I think Henry Thomas is the better actor, but I think Drew Barrymore is wonderful and really good.
Especially considering how young she was.
Yeah.
Well, and she plays it well. Like, she's adorable, and she dresses him up, and, like, you really get the feeling that, again, not unlike a kid with a cat or something, she's like, oh, this is just a toy to play with, and Elliot doesn't really get the gravity of the situation, but kind of gets that it's a bigger deal than that. E.T. just seems fine playing, which is also really a cute kind of part of this as well, that he just gets along with everyone.
Well, and I don't know how much this is true, but apparently, you know, what I've read and stuff is that she actually made up a lot of her lines as a kid, because, you know, kind of as a kid, they kind of just let you say whatever.
Yeah.
So at the part where she's like, I'm not stupid, you know, and like kind of her famous lines, she apparently, like, a lot of that is improv, which is just really cool. Huh.
Well, she came from an acting family, so she, for her entire young life at the time, she'd probably been trained as the next heir in that line.
Like the third generation of Barrymores, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all of them had substance abuse problems. No, but no, she did especially for a movie that's centered around kid performances. I mean, usually kids are just so nervous that they're very mechanical in their line delivery, and there's really no emotion behind it because they're either just so nervous of screwing up and getting the director mad at them, or mom and dad getting mad at them for not being the meal ticket they were hoping for. But these are some of the most, I think, relatable kid performances in any movie.
Well, and to your point, I guess that's kind of what's his name? That's what Spielberg was always good with. He always did a good job at recruiting kid actors, except for Shia LaBeouf, and who at that point was like just a creepy man child, I guess. But, you know, like the little girl in Poltergeist is, frankly, actually Indiana Jones is the year before. Poltergeist is what, 2 years after? This is when he's working constantly. It's actually kind of like, that's why he eventually, like, kind of retired for 2 years. But there's also a little girl in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, isn't there? The one who gets kidnapped.
I thought that was a little boy.
Was it a little boy? There's a child of one sort or another.
Poltergeist too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who? Sorry. Fun fact. The girl in Poltergeist, she died of constipation. So you know, go to the bathroom, guys.
What? Jeez.
That got really dark just now.
That's funny.
Don't be afraid to go.
That's not funny, but it's funny.
I'm serious. I'm sorry. I'm a GI nurse. And they told us that in GI training, that she died from that. So, like, it's serious. And to tell our patients, like, to watch that.
We're talking about the person from Poltergeist?
Yeah. The little girl from Poltergeist didn't poop to death.
There was a lot of sad deaths around Poltergeist, if you ever want to look into that. Like, who was the older sister that got murdered by her boyfriend?
Yeah, that happened. Yeah. It's supposed to be one of those cursed productions, which is one of those, like, very... It's like The Exorcist, where it's, like, kind of like Catholic wet dream stuff. Like, see, you invoke the devil, and then everyone starts dying, and you're just like, guys, come on, it's a movie. But, I mean, yeah, I guess a lot of people died from it, so whatever. I have no end to this rant, but...
Except Max von Sydow, because he's immortal.
Oh, Max von Sydow is a vampire, I'm pretty sure. He can't die. Creepy old man. Like, he's awesome. He's probably doing... It's like him and Abe Bagoda just look... They've looked like they've been 70 since the 80s, and they have not aged a day since. I don't know how that works, but that's kind of what's happened.
So, you guys, do you think E.T. is very believable as an alien, and the look and behavior and stuff like that? Like, I think it's really believable, and that's another reason why this movie's kind of classic and good, is it makes you believe, like, hey, that could, you know, if an alien was here, that could potentially be, like, how it is.
Well, go ahead, Matt, sorry.
When I was a kid, I had a book that was about, like, theoretical alien life, and someone actually, with a book, I remember theorized that E.T. might be an evolved kind of turtle. Well, alien version of their, I mean, short, stumpy, kind of extends its neck up and down.
I remember this audiobook that was told entirely from the perspective of Gertie, Drew Barrymore's character, back when the books came on the tape and they had to make a sound before you could turn the page. You remember those?
Teddy.
Yes.
Yeah, like a Teddy Ruxpin-y kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Which I always thought was an interesting touch. I have no idea if they got Drew Barrymore to record that or get a sound alike, but I thought it was a good perspective on it because, you know, it's strange because it's kind of an ensemble movie amongst the three or four kids, but at the end of the day, Elliot's the dominant character, but the other ones are really interesting.
Well, I mean, and finally, to Lauren's, like, direct point, what's easy to do is to make the aliens scary. And when you brought up that initial story, it is. It's a very traditional narrative of, like, the kind of thing that they did in... you know, Exorcist or whatever, the unknown is the most terrifying thing. And so it's in many ways a much harder story to tell to make people intrigued by aliens in Close Encounters of the Third Kind and not be terrified by them, but trying to understand. It's why you can have a show like X-Files for, you know, 6.5 seasons before it becomes really shitty. And so in that way, E.T., is really interesting. You know, the idea that this, I mean, Daniel keeps calling him like a little collector botanist type, which, you know, is contextually it makes sense.
Yeah, which I didn't know. You like blew my mind with that. Yeah. Daniel, I paid attention to that first scene, but you're right. He's totally collecting samples.
Yeah, and it's, but I mean, it's so charming because that's kind of what would happen if we ended up on an alien world too. We would just be collecting stuff. They panic and run away from a man and his dogs and leave him behind. It's a, you know, he acts like a normal scientist-y little thing would. It's adorable. I don't know. It is. It's a very believable exercise in character building.
Well, another thing that I think is just fascinating to me is in an interview with Steven Spielberg, he said his inspiration was a pug and Albert Einstein.
And when you said that, now, I totally am like, I can see that.
And like ever since I heard that interview, like whenever I see E.T., that's all I can picture. Like, look at him and tell me you don't see a pug or Einstein. You can't. It's like, it's perfect.
That's so cute. And they did manage to make him adorable and very alien at the same time, which is really hard to do. you know, especially with some of the knockoffs of this, you know, like Mac and Me, which is a notoriously bad movie. But, you know, it's really hard to make something that's both cute and monstrous in the same stroke, which is why something like Gremlins, there's a transition, right? You can't do both. But E.T. pulls it off, and I think it pulls it off kind of nicely.
Well, I mean, that scene with E.T. in the dress, oh, what can I say?
I know, it's a Chuck Jones bit, which is kind of funny.
So the year that this film was made, it won Best Score, right, mm-hmm. for Oscars. It won Best Score, but it was nominated for Best Picture, but
it lost to Gandhi.
To Gandhi, that's right.
An even longer and even more boring film.
Also starring a no, I'm not going to finish that.
A white guy playing a brown face or red face or whatever.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Well, I mean, it is, right? It's what's his name playing Gandhi?
Ben Kingsley.
It's a fine movie.
Right.
It's just, I've never seen it.
It is extraordinarily long. I think I watched it in Murphy's class in high school, and it is like 6.5 hours long. It's really the longest. Although I think this did surpass Star Wars, didn't it? This is bigger than Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was only beaten by another Spielberg movie. It was only beaten by Jurassic Park. And he himself had, like, set the record with Jaws before it was beaten by Star Wars. So, like, this is a huge movie.
And then Star Wars won again later.
And now it's Avatar, which okay. is such a boring movie.
Oh, God.
They're making 12 of them or whatever now, and who the hell could be bothered to watch any of them?
What are you talking about? They're making 12?
I like the first Avatar. I don't know about... obviously haven't seen any later ones.
Have you rewatched the first one?
No.
They haven't released any of the later ones.
What are you talking about?
They literally have... 2 in post-production and have signed on to make 4 more.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And there's a whole Avatar Land opening at Animal Kingdom in Disney, if it's not already right. open.
Avatar Mads make me empathize with cat people. I've been too, by the way. It's people. Awesome.
Yeah. Well. What were you saying, Matt?
Avatar made me actually able to empathize with 7-foot-tall cat people. That takes something.
But have you rewatched it?
No.
But no, that's just it. No one does. It's so boring. Like, it's over 2.5 hours. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes, I think.
It really only worked in theaters because 3D was so new at the time. But even back then when I saw it, the plot was terrible.
I mean, it's Pocahontas or Fern Gully or something.
Dances with Wolves.
I heard at South Park, did they call it Dances with Smurfs?
Fair enough. Whatever. I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
It made over $2 billion, which is the biggest thing ever. And, I mean, fine, whatever. I guess James Cameron knows how to take money from people, but...
Well, he lost the Oscar that year to his ex-wife, which caused me to laugh.
That's true. For Hurt Locker, right?
Yep.
Foot Locker, yeah. Hurt Locker.
I mean, the Foot Locker would be a great... This year's Academy Award for Best Shoe goes to the Jordan Airs. Oh, man, I just sounded so white just then. I'm sorry. Sam Worthington was in that, too. Ugh, gross. Gross. Best known for Call of Duty Black Ops video games.
So another thing I love about this movie is they don't really... is they show the kids, like, way more than the adults.
Yes, they do.
And I don't know, for some reason I love that.
Well, and I think Daniel got it right. It's like nowadays when they do something like Stranger Things, they have to, mm-hmm. they almost have to add more adults. Because the kids drive these plots. And it is something that's changed with our culture a little bit. But in the 1980s, the idea of the kids, like, running the show is something that really did happen in these movies. And I love it because the kids are never precocious. They're never, like, too smart for their own good. They act like kids, which is nice. I really enjoy that.
Well, one of the best moments in the film for me was that scene with Elliot and E.T. They're psychically linked, and then Elliot starts tossing all those frogs out of their jars that were going to be dissected.
Yes, yeah.
And then he ends, like, by... kissing that girl in his class. And it's like, you know, I'm thinking of Stranger Things, and some of those kids are acting like they're much older when it comes to, you know, members of the opposite sex. But in this, there was just something still kind of innocent about it that felt more kid-like, if that makes any sense.
For sure. I love when he sets the frogs free.
Well, and I mean, the kind of scene that people remember is when E.T. starts getting drunk, starts drinking the beer, and, you know, and Elliot, of course, is the one getting drunk in class because of the psychic link. It's kind of the easiest way they show it. But the other things are, like you were saying, E.T.'s watching TV and just starts trying to kiss people, or like, and Elliot starts to kiss people because that's what he sees on the TV. It's those are the moments that are charming. Or that the mom isn't paying attention to the kids. Drew Barrymore tries to introduce her to E.T., but the mom couldn't, is not listening at all. She's putting away the groceries. E.T. gets hit by the fridge door. And so Drew Barrymore puts on, I don't think it's Sesame Street, I think it's the electric company. And that's when they're talking about phoning home. And that's where he gets the idea to phone home. By which we get the kind of most famous scene from the movie, where they go out into the desert or into the woods to try to build this machine out of a speak and spell, out of a saw blade. This is where we see that he can heal Elliot, right?
Well, he gets the idea for the phone from the comic too, from the newspaper, right?
Right. Flash Gordon.
You know, that pissed me off. I still get dropped calls on my phone, and these kids in 1982 built an intergalactic communication device out of a speak and spell.
Well, maybe E.T.'s ship with his people on it isn't far enough from Earth that would actually work.
Okay.
Guess so.
Yeah, maybe.
Because, I mean, if they did the head count after they flew away their ship, they might realize they've lost somebody. They might still be hanging around nearby.
I'm just picturing how a head count on an alien ship would look.
Well, but that's kind of the beauty of it, though, is you think that this, like, E.T. is sick. He's in the hospital. They're trying to revive him and do all these things. And you think it's not working. Then all of a sudden, he's alive, and Elliot realizes he's alive, and you do realize that the phone did work.
Yeah, like, it's so interesting how this is a kind of perfect example of show don't tell in movie making, because E.T. never really speaks. Like, he makes kind of guttural noises, but for the most part, we're figuring it out with him, which is kind of interesting. And along those ways, we do see these kind of horrifying images. These you know, E.T. is wanders off from Elliot after they put together whatever this Flash Gordon machine is. And from that, he is now so ill from being on Earth, he is rolled down an embankment into a ditch. And cats are or a raccoon is sniffing at him, which is kind of terrifying. That's when the men in black show up. And you never see any of these humans' faces except for Keyes. You just kind of get this grimness of this adorable thing dying, which really is quite unsettling, actually.
It is. And I'm sorry, again, I'm a nurse, so I couldn't help but laugh. Like, it's very disturbing, but I couldn't help but laugh. Like, how do you know what the blood pressure is supposed to be? Or where E.T.'s heart is? Or if he has one heart? Or...
like, or literally anything. Other than at one point it was clearly breathing air, and that's all they're hoping for. Right. Like, that's literally all they got going.
Right. Like, how do you know what a normal respiration rate is for an alien? Clearly there's no medical book for this, so, like, how are they acting like this is, I don't know.
I mean, I guess, unless the assumption is that they've done this before and, like, they kind of know what to do, which is, like...
Maybe.
Which is literally, like...
Maybe that's the conspiracy, and why the older, you said his name's Keith?
Keys. They just refer to him because he's the one with the keys.
Keys, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what he's referring to.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing I can think of, because you're right. It is, and it's also filmed, I mean, you can contend to this as well, I guess, but it is filmed well like an ER scene, because it is chaotic. There is beeping for no reason, and from the point of view of a kid who doesn't know what's really happening, it is terrifying. You know, it is beeping.
Oh, it's very much just like a code, like a regular code in a hospital, because it's controlled chaos. And that's kind of what a code is. It's very like they're communicating. They're saying like that really is what a code is. And again, you know, in my research and stuff for this, I read that Steven Spielberg actually hired a medical team and they told them to treat this just like a normal patient. So I love that. I think that's what makes it more authentic. I just kind of think it's hilarious. Like, how would you even know, like, okay, E.T.'s blood pressure is 100 over 60. Okay, is that good? Is that bad?
Well, especially since they got him when he was already, like, turning gray and dying, right? Like, they didn't have him when he was perky and pink and fresh. He was already, like, unconscious on the ground. So you're not exactly starting with a good baseline.
Right. And I also can't believe that this, you know, they make it seem like he died. And that's very sad to be a family, you know, a family friendly movie. That's kind of a heartbreaking moment for a kid. Right. So
it's terrifying. And at this point, they literally put him in like a sarcophagus, like with a glass door, because the assumption is that he's just dead. And they don't want whatever biological like illness he has to spread. So that's really creepy. That's awful.
Yeah, that's something that makes a lot of sense, is that that they are afraid that E.T. could be a spreader of an unknown disease. You know, like, he's the Europeans, we're the Indians. You know, the only person who has the most contact with him is dying too. And so the first thing you do is just surround everything with plastic wrap and send in the spacesuit guys.
Yeah, it's contagion protocol. You know, it's epidemic protocol or whatever. Like, that's and it is creepy.
It's never explained, and that's what makes it so creepy. I mean, we know now what was going on and why they would be doing that. But at the time, when I was a kid, I mean, I'm with you guys. That was incredibly frightening, simply because they never stopped to explain, oh, this is just quarantine protocol.
Well, and to Elliot, they don't, like, they clearly, Elliot is more of a curiosity, except for, again, those characters who sort of get humanized by the end, but not really. You know, it's really bleak. It's a very bleak moment. But once E.T. starts to wake up, because the ship is getting close, they decide to bust out. So hiding in a doctor's coat, they run down a kind of vacuum tubeway onto the back of a van, and then they steal the van, which is kind of great. Right? They get to the brother, and then, using several kids on bikes, they decide to, you know, try to make a break back for the forests, back for the woods. In along the way, of course, we have the kind of famous flying scene where they're on an open roadway, which I guess is whatever. I ran out of momentum. This is where they fly, as a kind of in the flying V over a group of police officers who originally had guns. And in the cut we have, which I have, I think, the 30th anniversary edition that we saw, they added the guns back after the 20th anniversary, when they photoshopped them out, and everyone was kind of upset about that.
Okay.
Yeah, that was...
There was a controversy over that?
There was.
Well, it was like a couple of years after Star Wars got re-edited, and everybody got upset, especially after George Lucas said he wouldn't put the original uncut version out. So when Steven Spielberg started doing it, everybody was just concerned that, you know, every single film would be updated and changed, and that was seen as a very, very bad thing.
Well,
even though the scenes with the guns weren't really that long.
Well, and they weren't that important. Like, you know, like in the grand scheme of things, they didn't change the effects. It's all still practical effects. It was just a silly change for no reason. But if you start making silly changes for no reason, they don't stop. But I do like the idea that George Lucas, we were just like, fine, George, whatever, you're ruining classics. But with Steven Spielberg, we thought he was better than that. And it's just kind of like, come on, Steven. Whatever. I don't know.
Well, he got the hint, which Lucas never did.
No, Lucas isn't allowed to do anything ever again. Yeah, I love when they interview him and he goes to a Star Wars movie and he's like, I thought it was pretty good. I'm like, you lost this, man. You could have kept making him, but you kept screwing stuff up. Don't give me that crap.
Well, just think of the life he leads now with his, what, $5 billion fortune and his gigantic ranch that covers like 300 acres.
And his turkey gobbler of a neck. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure he's suffering.
Yeah. Yeah, don't worry about Steven. Or don't worry about George. He's fine. Still trying to get Sebulba to get a pizza deal or something. I don't know.
Oh, for all you lady listeners, you should check out Henry Thomas nowadays.
Is he good?
Look up current pictures. He's not bad looking.
I'm looking it up right now. Hey, he's not bad. I mean, he looks better than Drew Barrymore now.
Little Elliot's grown up.
Yeah, he's 46 years old now.
Oh, my God. Can't believe that.
Robert McNaughton, on the other hand, not as good. He looks like someone's dad. Just kind of creepy. Anyway, Henry Thomas makes peace with E.T. after 30 years. I don't even know what that could mean. I'm done looking up this stuff. Anyway, we should get to final thoughts. We'll go back around the way we came. Lauren, what did you think?
No, I love this movie. I definitely think it held up for sure. Just to share with you guys are my friends, so you know, but I'll just share with Myopia and our group here. I have a son named Elliot, and he is my world and my love, and he's 9 months old, and I never thought that a movie from 36 years ago would affect my life now or affect my son, but it totally has. E.T. was the one reason I did not want to name my son Elliot. I was worried that everyone would say Elliot or make fun of him. Thankfully, I think he's young enough where kids his age won't know what this movie is. Maybe not. Maybe they'll know what a classic is. A lot of people love it, but my husband Scott and I literally went through a baby book of names, of 5,000 names, and this was the one we both loved. And so I love it, and we're going to own it. And this movie just again reminded me that Elliot is an awesome kid. It's a great kid, great name. So, I never thought that this movie would be affect what I named my son, but it totally did. So just wanted to share that story. And two thumbs up. I loved it.
Excellent.
So I'm not allowed to say Elliot next time.
No,
I see.
No, I hate that.
Okay.
You can just uninvite him to things. That's fine.
Oh, stop that.
Go ahead, Matt.
We'll see. I don't even know if I'll let Elliot watch this movie. We'll see. We'll see how old he'll have to be.
Okay. This is a movie I historically didn't like, probably because I remember seeing it when I was 3 or 4 and being quite frankly terrified of it. And then I saw it again when I was probably in my 20s. But a third watch, I still thought it was pretty darn good. I gave it a 9 out of 10 on my blog, which is fairly rare. Most movies I give a 7 or 8 to.
Daniel?
This is one of those movies that every time I see it, especially as I get older, it seems to work more for me, and I'm not sure why. Probably because when I was a kid, I took it for granted because everything seemed to be copying it, so it didn't seem like anything special. But as I've gotten older, I could just see how special it really is, simply because the kids are so much more relatable, and they actually act like kids would in that situation, which even in Stranger Things, you don't really get that as much anymore. So, yeah, I mean, this is still the best sort of film of its genre.
So, my thought finally on this is last year, there was a little movie that came out called It. It is about a bunch of kids who fight off a monster man. You know, one of those Stephen King coked out of his mind monster man. It reminds me of more 80s movies than this does, okay? Because kids in the 80s were precocious, too smart for their dialogue, or their dialogue was too smart for what kids actually say, rather. And it's written by someone who doesn't even remember what kids were like, or in Stephen King's case, had done so much drugs he didn't remember what he had written. The controversy always comes up when people talk about It was about the orgy scene, et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't exist in this world. These kids are written like kids. They respond like kids. Not unlike Matt, I do remember being kind of nervous about this film, freaked out about this film. Rewatching it, I can see why, but I regret not watching it more. Because these kids are not only acting like kids in a very visceral, terrifying sometimes way, you know, reacting to things that are scary as kids would, which makes it actually much more scary than a stoic adult reacting to them. But the movie overall, therefore, is very effective. I find everyone charming. I find the kids charming. I find E.T., the model on E.T., and the way he acts charming. So yeah, definitely recommend, definitely watch it. There are some truly magical moments, like when the kids are flying, which were so impressive that even hardened film critics all loved this. Even, you know, Truffaut loved this. You know, anyway, regardless, we could talk about this all day, but...
Yeah, didn't you say that a French film festival, they all just stood up and applauded?
Yeah, at Cannes. This was a big deal at Cannes. And everywhere, you know.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, if you don't, like, smile when E.T. says, I'll be right here, and points to Elliot's heart, like, you have no soul.
Yes, Lauren and I were, like, crying. Like, I was actually openly weeping. So, you know, that happened.
It was a very manly cry, don't worry.
No, it wasn't. I was ugly crying. I'll admit, I had pizza and beer in me. I was just ugly crying. So I guess at this point, it's kind of traditional for me to give you a little hint as to what comes next. But I didn't have anything, so give me 2 seconds. So next week, when you tune in at the beginning, or I guess the second week of March, we will be talking Brendan Fraser in one of the roles that I kind of alluded to earlier, where he learns how to, you know, use a microwave for the third time in his career. So tune in next week and every future week when we put a little piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defender Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by the Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.